First meeting of the House Judiciary Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 1:36 p.m. on Wednesday, March 9th, 2011. Present today are Representative Grunberg, Representative Keller, Representative Pruitt, and myself, Representative Thompson. Let the record also reflect that Chair Gatto is excused today, and we expect him back on Friday for the meeting. Before we start, please turn off your cell phones.
Holmes, too.
Oh, Representative Holmes is also out ill today, so she will be here Friday. Please turn off your cell phones. Just turning the vibrate will interfere with the recording system. At today's meeting, we'll be hearing House Bill 175, an act relating to an appearance before a judicial officer after arrest relating to penalties for operating a vehicle without possession of proof of motor vehicle liability insurance or a driver's license, relating to penalties for certain arson offenses, amending Rule 5A1, Alaska Rules of Criminal Procedure and 43.10, Alaska Rules of Administration, and providing for an effective date. It's my intention to hear this bill today, but it's set it aside until Chairman Gatto's return. Plus, because of the power outage last night, we have no phone connectability, and so nobody can call in to testify. So we will leave public testimony open. Today we'll hear House Bill 175 version /A from the House Judiciary Committee by request of the Department of Law. As previously stated, we are hearing the bill today, and we'll leave it open until Chairman Gatto returns. Here to present House Bill 175 is Annie Carpinetti from the Department of Law, Criminal Division. Ms. Carpinetti, please place yourself on the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Annie Carpinetti, and I represent the Criminal Division of the Department of Law. Thank you very much for hearing this bill today. I appreciate it. It addresses four questions of law, four fixes in our law that have, I call them my four mistakes. They're not all my mistakes, but the main one is a mistake that I made last year in the bail bill, which some of you were not here for, but some of you were. It was a last session, the legislature passed a major revision of our bail laws, the first one since 1966. And one of the changes that was made in that bill was change the court rules from which provided for a 24-hour deadline within which to bring a person who has been arrested in front of a judicial officer. The bail bill last year changed that deadline to 48 hours. Unfortunately, the mistake was, although we changed the court rules, which required a two-thirds vote of the legislature, we failed to change the statute addressing arrest. So this bill makes that change. I'm sorry that I have to ask you to do that, but we need to make them conform with the rule. So one of the fixes in this bill does, and that deals with sections 6 of the bill. In addition to the 24-hour rule in our arrest law, which is in section 1 of the bill, our uniform extradition law has a 24-hour provision that also needs to be changed to conform with the court rule. And that would be the time within which to bring a person who's arrested on a warrant from another state for a fugitive from another state. The second issue that the bill addresses is a contradiction between the rules of court and the statutes for the offense of driving without a driver's license in the possession of the driver, which is a violation of AS 28-15-131. Right now, under Title 28, that offense, and this is not driving without having a valid license, it's just not having one in your possession. Title 28 makes that a Class B misdemeanor, while at the same time, under the bail schedule, it's a correctable offense with a $50 bail amount. And you may have with you, I passed out some of the underlying documents that might be helpful to look at. In this backup packet are I put the court rules that were changed last year, and then there's a copy of AS 28-15-131, which is driving without a driver's license in your possession. And then the penalties for offenses in Title 28 that don't have a specific penalty already described, because some of them say the offense is a misdemeanor or a felony even. But if they don't specify, like this particular offense, it is considered a Class B misdemeanor, similar to a Class B misdemeanor. And the problem is that offenses aren't put on our bail schedules unless they're infractions. People are given citations for them, which they can send a check in and not have to appear in court. So it is inconsistent to have this offense both a Class B misdemeanor in our statutes and available correctable offense in our bail schedules. And after talking to the police and other law enforcement agencies, it was considered that this was more likely, it was better described as an infraction than a misdemeanor. So that's what Section 3 of the bill does. It provides that driving without a driver's license in your possession is an infraction. The third issue that the bill addresses is driving without proof of insurance in your possession, which is described in our statute, 2822019, which is in the bill, as a Class B misdemeanor with a mandatory fine of $500. Violation of that prohibition is also in the bail schedule with a $500 bail amount and is also correctable. So that's another inconsistency that should be fixed. And since the mandatory $500 fine for this offense was enacted in the last, I think, 5 years, we just left that fine there and described it as an infraction so it can be correctable and somebody can mail in the $500 bail amount and not have to appear in court. And the last issue that the bill addresses is an arson-related issue. In 2006, there was created by the legislature the Knickarm Public Use Area. It's in Title 41. The statutes creating the Knick Area Public Use, Knickarm Public Use Area, are in this packet that I dropped off at your offices. But in the statute that created this public use area, it provided that the Commissioner of Public of Natural Resources will adopt regulations addressing violations within that public use area. And the statute also provided that any violations would be infractions or violations and that they would be on the bail schedule as a bailable offense. And then regulations were adopted to address violations in that area, and they were put on the bail schedule. In 2008, after that, the legislature passed a new arson law creating arson in the third degree, which prohibits burning a vehicle on public lands, either municipal or state lands, starting a fire and burning a vehicle. And that made that offense a Class C felony. But burning a vehicle under the regulations in the Knick Arm public use area are a violation with a $50 bail amount. So if you burn a vehicle in the Knick Arm public use area right now, it's a $50 bailable amount. But if you do it in another area of public land, it would be a Class C felony. So this bill makes all burning of vehicles in public areas a Class C felony, because that was the later expression of legislative intent. So that brings us up to Section 6, which is actually just a rewriting of Court Rule 5 that we did last year to make it. I have Doug Gardner to thank for this. He did a really good job. Last year when this rule was being discussed, I believe in this committee, Chair Gatto or Representative Gatto at that time suggested that the word necessary in the rule was unnecessary and it should be necessary. And Sue McClain, who happened to be in my seat at the time, agreed with him. And it did make sense. It's one of those strange circumstances of English where necessary and unnecessary kind of mean the same thing. But the problem with the change was that necessary isn't used in the rule. So you don't, it's legislative drafting practice, you don't define a word that you're not using. So not making any substantive change in the rule. Doug Gardner rewrote it so we don't have to use the word at all, which for which I'm very grateful. And that's that last section. So that is House Bill 175 in a nutshell. I'd be happy to answer questions.
We've been joined by Representative Lynn. Okay, questions to Ms. Capra? We do have phone connectability.
We can call him and get his testimony.
Okay. Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We had a letter here from Jeff Mittman of the ACLU. Is he the person who...
Yeah, we would. We'll have to call him because our phones aren't working.
So. If we could do that at the appropriate time. But I do have a few questions. I am, Ms. Carpinetti, as usual, you're sharp and you're faster than me, and I'm slightly confused.
I've had a little more time to deal with these issues.
Yeah, that too. I know Mr. Mittman is going to discuss the 48 hours versus 24 hours, and his letter will explain that. So I'm not going to deal with sections 1 and 2 and 6. Okay. Well, now let me just ask you. I'd like to look at section 8B. On page 3, lines 17 and 18.
Okay.
I gather you feel that... Wait a minute. No, sorry. Well, yeah. Sections 1 and 2 will apply under 8A... to arrest for offenses before, on, or after the effective date of the act.
That's correct.
However, Section 6, which is covered in lines 17 and 18, does not apply to anything that occurs before. What we're talking about, it looks to me like Section 6 deals with arrests, and it's very similar to Sections 1 and 2. And it would seem to me that Section 6 in the applicability should be up under 1A. There's no reason for me to have a different applicability section for Section 6 than for Sections 1 and 2, because they all deal with time periods after an arrest within which the person must be brought before the judicial officer. I don't know, and I'm not sure if the applicability thing is written correctly for 1 and 2, but I would just like, since we're not passing the bill out today or amending it, the Department of Law, and I'm going to look at Sarah, and I'm looking at Gretchen over there too, to check carefully to make sure that the applicability section is written correctly with respect to Sections 1, 2, and 6. It seems to me they should all be treated the same. I don't see any reason to treat them differently.
Through the chair, I actually agree with you, but I would like to double check too.
Absolutely.
Because sometimes, since this is a committee bill and it was gone through legislative affairs, I would like to talk to them. And it may be just a courtesy to the court system that we don't change their rules retroactively. In this particular case, I don't think it would make a difference because the rule changes are not particularly different for Rule 5 because the 48 hours is already changed in the rule.
Because it seems to me, and I would say they should all be under sub A. I'm not certain that sub A is written right either, but it seems to me you could have an offense that was committed slightly before the effective date of the act, but the person wasn't arrested until after the effective date. And if so, you would want that section to apply because the focus is not on the date of the offense, but on the date of the arrest.
Yes, that's correct, which is why Sections 1 and 4 do apply to arrests for offenses before, on, or after.
Anyway, we're just flagging that. May I please continue?
Go right ahead, Representative Greenberg.
Now, the rest of the bill, I don't have a problem with Section 3. I think that's good. The question I have is with one of the questions, and I'd like to focus on Section 4. And the members can see that the underlying statute, AS 28.019, I guess we don't have that. Do we have that? I guess we don't have that that in here.
It's in the bill.
So we didn't put it in. Okay. My question is, and this is something I think I have raised before. Maybe Representative Lynn will remember it. The other folks weren't on the committee before. But a mandatory fine of $500 is extremely difficult for people in Mountain, many people, poor people in Mountain View. And they may not have insurance. But what they have to do is buy the insurance, pay the fine, and then they impound the car too. And it not only deprives them of the ability to get around, but it probably deprives them of the ability, as a practical matter, to get the car out of Hawk and get back on the road. And it's worsened because as long as they keep the car impounded, they continue to accrue storage charges. And I am concerned that they have to pay a mandatory fine of $500 and it can't be suspended. Let me ask you, can that be suspended or anything else through the chair to Ms. Carpinetti?
Through the chair, a mandatory fine, I would imagine that judges would suspend, although I would, since we're making it an infraction, I imagine it could be, but I would like to double check and see what the practice is. I would like to make one correction. I think you are assuming that this offense is driving without having automobile insurance at all.
I thought it was.
This offense is only driving without proof of automobile insurance when you're driving. It is correctable under the bail statutes.
May I inquire?
Right.
So if it's correctable, do they still have to pay the mandatory fine of $500?
Through the chair, no.
Oh, they don't. Oh, okay. Well, I would like it if you could check and see whether it can be suspended. I want to very carefully for the public to know, because this could come up on the floor or somewhere else, some kind of a little memo or something that we can put in the record to make certain that the judge does have the authority to dispense justice in these cases. And, you know, since we're just kind of flagging issues, if that's okay with you, Mr. Chair.
Absolutely.
May I continue, please?
Follow-up, Representative Kronberg.
Okay, now I want to get to another problem I have with the language. And this is Section 5, and we have that in one of the attachments here, which I guess is in Attachment 3 or 4. Okay, we have arson in the third degree, and that's a Class C felony. And then you mentioned something about the Knick thing. Is if you burn the car on the Knick public use area, it's only a violation, right?
It's a violation, and it's a $50 bail amount, yes.
Okay.
It should be attached to this material.
Do not remember much about the adoption of AS 1146-420. It seems to me, if you start a fire in a car that's on state or municipal land, it could be that you torch your car or something, it just did a out in a park or something, that having a felony. What was the rationale in making that a felony? Since we're looking at all of these from a cost point of view here, too. and there's nobody around or anything, no danger, or on a beach or somewhere.
Through the chair, I think the rationale was that people were torching cars and leaving them there, and if you do it in an area where there are trees or it could be very dangerous to the property around you and the people who are in the park using it.
So there was a rationale for this.
This was not one of the bills that the Department of Law sponsored, but yes, there was.
And then when it was done on Connect, you're just making that congruent with the rest of the
package. Right, and the arson in the third degree was adopted 2 years after the Connect Arm public use area was established, so which is, you know, it was a later expression of legislative intent, so we followed that.
Okay, well, I will pass on that, then. I understand the rationale. And I believe that okay, let me just, if I may, Mr. Chair.
Representative Greenberg.
What about number 7? What the amendments is, what is that, the arson bill?
Section 7?
That relates to 1140-11?
Yes, that flags the fact that the amendments in this bill to the Connect Arm public use area have the effect of changing the bail schedule for that offense, for those offenses.
And that is Section 5 of the bill.
Yes.
I see. Okay. Fine. And may I just ask, is there a reason why you want an effective date on here?
Through the chair, yes, there is. And it's just over the years, we've had police officers call our office, and it's about when a new drunk driving statute is in effect, and or various other things. It's easier for law enforcement, and it's for a lot of people, like, it's easier for the public too. So, like, for example, the cell phone bill that was discussed yesterday, if there's something that's going to be changing behavior of the public, it's important to have, we think it's important to have a date rather than, if you leave it blank, everybody has to count up 90 days from the date it was signed, and it's just easier. Plus the fact that we usually, when I first started doing this job, a lot of times criminal statutes would be made effective immediately, and I got kind of annoyed calls from the court system lawyers who didn't have time enough to make, to develop forms and procedures, and these things just take a little time. So July 1st usually gives people enough time to do what needs to be done for procedural issues, and then the police have a chance. You know, it's easier for the police to remember that if new
Thank
laws.
You. May I please follow up?
Follow up.
It sounds like the Department of Law is adopting an informal policy in legislation, at least criminal legislation or some types of legislation, and maybe July 1st is going to be a common date. I would suggest, with the chair's okay here, that when the first of these bills with this kind of an effective date makes its way onto the floor, that you have a statement, maybe a one paragraph or something, that we can read to the members of the House and the public, that generally we're going to see this effective date from the Department of Law, mm-hmm. because, you know, so there'll be uniformity, and this is a date that's been decided, so people generally won't be always asking, why are we doing this date, and we can put that on the record in front. I'd offer to stay on the floor if that is something you'd like to have done. I think that'll eliminate at least me asking these questions, unless I forget.
Sure. Through the chair, this is one that I use when I draft statutes. I don't know about other lawyers in our department, but I will find out whether other people have. I draft most of our criminal legislation, but, you know, other lawyers draft civil legislation, and they may have different reasons. But it just seems tidier, I think, for people to.
Mr. Chair, if I may. I commend you if you're going to do something. I can see doing this. I think it makes sense. And if the department's going to have a policy, informal or whatever, and you'd like that announced, then you'll probably have an exception in the next bill, so whatever you want. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for giving me leeway.
Thank you. Representative Pruitt.
Yeah, back to the conversation that you had on the arson. Just to help me understand, is there a different severity if the arson is done on a vehicle that someone does not own, it's done with malicious intent, as opposed to if someone takes it out to the Kinnick area and or there's already one out there and they're torching it for fun? Is there different severity levels on that?
Actually, for arson in the third degree, let me just find it. I think it's any fire or explosion on a vehicle. Let me get. I'm sure. Well, I think I have it. I have my backup here. Just a minute. The arson in the third degree prohibits a person from intentionally damaging a motor vehicle by starting a fire or causing an explosion while that vehicle is located on state or municipal land. Okay. So the culpable mental state is intentionally damaging the motor vehicle by starting the fire.
That
it's not a mistake. It wouldn't.
Right. Okay. And I guess it just kind of wanted to ask the question because it proves the severity of making sure we get this changed, because if someone's out there and maliciously does that to someone else's car in a place where it would be $50, man, we need to get that corrected soon. So thank you.
Mm-hmm. Further questions from the committee? Hearing none. Ms. Carpinetti, thank you. Oh, one more. Representative Greenberg.
Thank you. Thank you for your indulgence, as you know. This looks to me like a single subject, no problem, because it all deals with criminal law and procedure. And it doesn't look to me, with one of the two of the things we talked about, like it's going to, and my staff said when she talked to me, this didn't look like a really controversial bill or anything. Mm-hmm. Since we're approaching maybe 60% of the session or 55%, is there anything that the Department of Law else is considering that would fall into this category that could be put in the bill? Because I see this as less controversial than some of the other ones we've seen, and if there are other fix-its or anything, this might be a good train to look at.
Thank you. I'll go back and check. I can't say tell you right now, but I will check with my office.
Representative Keller.
I actually should have resisted. I was just going to ask, did you want it more controversial?
No.
I should have resisted, but I
no. I was thinking. I was thinking of things that were minor glitches or something that wouldn't be controversial that we wouldn't be hearing from the ACLU and folks on.
All of you from the ACLU.
I think that these are the ones that we gathered together all the kind of minor fixes into this bill already. But thank you for mentioning that.
Thank you very much, Ms. Carpinetti.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. We do not have phone connectability, so if people are trying to call in, they cannot do it. We would have to call out. I have one person, Mr. Mittman, that does have a waiting to see if we want to call him, but it kind of is like he'd be the only one that we know of, so maybe we should wait and leave public testimony open and come back when we can have call-ins and we could have maybe both sides of an issue instead of just one side. So at this time, I think that we'll probably wait on hearing from Mr. Mittman from the ACLU. Yes?
Mr. Chair, I took the liberty of asking staff to take a look and see if there are any other non-controversial criminal bills that we have or maybe members know that are floating around.
Time together.
Yeah, because when we get down to the last few weeks of this session, it's going to be chaos if we don't do some management now.
Mm-hmm. I can definitely see where your time crunch is going to be of the essence. So any people in the audience would like to come up and testify on House Bill 175? All right, hearing none, we'll leave public testimony open until this bill is brought back again under previously read bills. And let's see, our next Judiciary Committee will be held on Friday, March 11th at 1 p.m. And this meeting will be hearing House Bill 127 and House Bill 76. The working group for House Bill 150 will meet at 3 p.m. on Thursday, March 10th. Yes, Representative Greenberg.
We have a report to preview. The working group wrapped up on 127 yesterday.
Great.
And we're coming out with a CS that takes all the provisions that people were virtually in unanimous. I don't think there was, we didn't have anything that was, except for the two I'm going to mention. We were all unanimous on everything, and we're putting those into a CS. And then there'll be two amendments. One is Representative Lynn's amendment, and I'm not sure we have the latest version of that.
So, Mr. Chair, we're going to go through with the original amendment.
Oh, okay.
We had a secondary, and I was talking to Ms. Carbonetti. I believe we're going to go with the original amendment and hopefully up or down vote so as not to delay further the bill.
And then there was one other provision that Gretchen will, and you guys will get a memo on what it does. And I didn't put a name on it because I don't know if who's going to offer it, if anybody does. But to my knowledge, those are the only two amendments we have. And if anybody has anything else they would like, please let us know. But otherwise, I hope we can dispose of that very quickly.
And that would be on House Bill 127, which we'll have up with the amendment then on Friday. And you're meeting in tomorrow on House Bill 150 to try to get that clear.
Yeah, and we've given a lot of work to the Department of Law to get stuff together and make sure things are dealt with it. We've dealt with conceptually. And I won't guarantee that'll be ready by the close of business tomorrow because there's a lot of work to be done. But we're making good progress, and we do have the one bill finished, except for the two amendments.
Thank you for your extra work on the, and the staff, too, by the way, and the Department of Law also.
And they're all mostly sitting here.
All right. Then at 2.09 p.m., today's meeting of the House Judiciary Committee is gaveled out.